Alright, this is Kinnack, coming back for the first Metroplexity podcast of the year 2010, also known as The Future. So, didn't find the make fly button in the car yet, but things are going okay, I guess. Well, I've had a cold for pretty much the entire future so far, so that's not necessarily awesome. Do have a bunch of questions. Before that, though, I want to get into a bit of a, New Year's-y, last year, next year sort of thing, which is kind of hokey, but you'll have that. So I guess this is the state of the game, beginning of 2010. Over the course of the last year, added a ton of content. The Slags quest went in, the bunch of crafting stuff, including, I believe all of both sushi and armory, but also a bunch of recipes for the rest, and coding also, all of hacking, all of gang warfare / PvP, the entire gang system, chat, and I'm sure a bunch of stuff that I'm forgetting. The only real failing, I would say, is really that we didn't get the Survivor's Quest in already. Only having one step of the main quest line in a year is pretty, I'm not going to say depressing, but kind of much slower than I hoped that we'd be going. Next year, we're looking at Survivor's Quest, the stuff in between the Survivor's Quest and Old Town, which includes a couple of pretty interesting side quests, cybernetics, possibly the pet system. Pet system never really has to go in, so it keeps getting bumped, but I would really like to have it in there at some point. And then the Old Town quest. In the best of all possible worlds, we would have... we would have the time to get in another main quest step after the Old Town quest. I don't honestly expect that to happen, but we'll see. I'm trying this amazing new concept called scheduling, to see if we can do that, see if we can kind of overcome the sort of lack of focus from last year. That's sort of my post-mortem. Half the reason the Survivor's Quest didn't come out last year was because my natural inclination for design is to be a little, is to kind of schedule myself as I go, being kind of flighty, basically. And the other half of it was just that hacking ended up taking a lot longer than I thought it was going to. Both the implementation and in the bug fixing, and needed hacking to put in the Survivor's Quest, so... That depends. Ended up pushing it forward into this year. So that's kind of where we're at there. So I'm trying to schedule myself. I will say in advance, before I tell you any sort of dates that I'm thinking about, I really hate scheduling. And I think that adhering to schedules above focus on quality is how we get movie games. So, like, anytime you think, like, oh, this game, you know, came out from this movie, it's going to be the worst game ever, that's because people are being slaves to schedule. So, don't get into that argument with me, I guess, is my advice before I actually tell you anything. It will not end well. So, if I totally miss my schedule, if it's, like, October, and the Survivor's Quest still hasn't gotten out yet, don't hassle me because of the schedule. That's just, not going to happen. Not going to end well for either of us, I guess is the moral of the story. But if the whole schedule thing works out and I've timed myself out appropriately, we're looking at beginning of February for the Survivor's Quest release. I already had one section done last year, And I just finished up with another section just this last week. I'm definitely not great at the whole scheduling thing yet, though. There was a day where I had, like, my to-do was all of the choice adventures for the area that was implemented for that quest. And then that turned out to be about 30 hours of work. Luckily, the next section of it was, like, 5 hours of work, so I just kind of, you know, bled it over and, you know, didn't sleep a whole lot. It worked out. Which has absolutely no correlation with the fact that I have a cold now. I'm sure. It's absolutely not. So, there's that. But assuming that we go okay, we're looking at the beginning of February. And then going forward after that, we've got, you know, I will be, my first task after that is figuring out whether the scheduling helped and whether I will continue doing it. And if people don't give me crap about missing deadlines, I will continue telling you roughly when I expect stuff to happen if I do keep scheduling. If people give me crap but the scheduling helped, I will just stop telling people. It's not really an ultimatum, just kind of a so you know. If I stop telling you when things are going to happen, it's because it's not worth the stress. The other half of, I guess, the new year, old year, is what if we were a big corporation would be like our shareholders report. I do feel, I guess, like not no great obligation, but I think that the folks who donate deserve to know kind of, you know, where their money's going and how things are doing. Since we started taking donations, we've been consistently a couple months ahead on server costs, which has been pretty awesome. It means, you know, we, even if, you know, there was a really bad month for donations, we would have been able to pull through and keep the servers running. Right now we're actually about 3 or 4 months ahead, mostly due to an interesting quirk in the way small business taxes work. You need to kind of empty out your account at the end of the year, so some of that went to paying forward on server fees. A little bit of that went to advertising, well, not really like advertising, but like business cards and shirts for Gen Con, which went over pretty well. We got some new players. We've spread the word a bit. We will probably be doing something like that again next year. We may have a booth at Origins, maybe. It's not an official word from above yet, but if we have the resources and, I guess, like the manpower really to do it, we might do booth at Origins. And the rest of it, though, everything, you know, aside from the stuff that goes in costs, ends up basically getting split between me and Puyo. So we have been able to start paying Puyo, which is pretty awesome. She kind of entered into this on a pro bono basis, but it's nice to be able to start paying her. And obviously it's nice to be able to pay myself a little bit. I've been asked before if, you know, I would do this as a full-time job, if that became an option, and I certainly would. I don't expect that to happen for quite a while. That's not like a next year thing. That's like a maybe 2011 thing, maybe 2012. Maybe, you know, when the game actually goes into full release, we'll have, you know, enough folks. It's just a matter of, player base size. There will probably be, well, all right, so going forward in next year, I think that Metroplexity's cash flow is pretty much solid. I don't think that we'll have any problems, presuming, you know, I don't, like, drop off a cliff or, you know, take until October to get the Survivor's Quest out or something. I think that we'll have plenty of money to keep the game going, which is good. Personal finances get a little more dicey, which may result in reductions in development time, insofar as I'm still looking for a job, even though I haven't found one, and just like the general stressing about finances and so forth tends to cut into things. But yeah, that's pretty much how things have been going. Yeah, that's about all I can come up with. So I will go into questions. We've got first set from Blarg. Man, 2010, how does it feel like being in the future? Pretty nice. I'm working on an online game that I love, which is pretty future-y. This is kind of what the information age was supposed to be about, right? Producing content that people actually want in exchange for, you know, money that is given rather than forced. I guess that's kind of the hippie version of the information age. And, you know, kind of being a information age hippie, it works out. So, yeah, the future's pretty cool. I'm definitely I'm looking forward further. It's kind of bleak, but that works out. I mean, I'm writing a game about a bleak future. I'm seeing a bleak future. It makes it easy to get inspired for plot lines and NPC dialogue and so forth. I thought of a real question. I'm sure that you've been asked the metric asked ton of times, but how close is reincarnation to being a thing that exists? Are there going to be any other main quests before the Survivor quest to go in before it gets in? If not, are you going to add others later, NS13 style? Let's see. I'll answer those one at a time. How close is reincarnation to being a thing that exists? I think I've mentioned this before, but... So, Survivor's Quest, Old Town, and then there's like three past there, probably. The third one probably being pretty small. So, in Amazing Miracle World, end of this year. End of, you know, the year that just came up. Because, you know, I couldn't be done with it by the end of 2009. We'll say. So, that's Happy Magical Fairy World. I'm guessing... If things go smoothly, and that means both like game-wise and life-wise, end of 2011, which is kind of depressing, but there's that. If we don't see an increase in main quest chunks per year, it'll be quite a while, which would be a bummer. But like I was saying before, I would rather put out good content than fast content. If it takes till 2013, it takes till 2013. It's just kind of depressing thinking on that timescale. Are there going to be any other main quests before the Survivor's Quest to go in before it? Yeah, that's what I was just saying. If it were just the Survivor's Quest, and then after that, I mean, we'd be talking, you know, early this year, but that's not what's going on. If not, are you going to add another Slater NS13 style? That's not the plan at all. When the main quest line is done, you'll be at the point where reincarnation makes sense. It's totally not a dig on Kingdom of Loathing, in that their game, the whole reset mechanic they have there isn't supposed to really make sense, in my opinion. And it doesn't, and that's fine. I mean, it's Kingdom of Loathing. But ours is kind of integrated, and you're not anywhere near the point where it's integrated into. So from a storyline perspective, reincarnation isn't going to go in until it works in the storyline, until you get there. The other half, and this is barely important with you pointing out the NS13 stuff. Yeah, I'm not gonna. I'm not going to reward people with the same reward for vastly different amounts of work. It's kind of. Yeah. So I'm not going to start saying, okay, you can reincarnate now, and then I'll just keep adding in more quests. That's terrible for people who have been, who are playing now, because they'll run out of stuff and have to listen to everyone whining, and, you know, suddenly, you know, the stuff that they were doing is suddenly harder. And it's terrible for, you know, the new people coming in who have to work twice as hard as the people who had come before. That's not a route I'm going to go down. There will be, you know, a series of beta reset contests, basically, for the iterations of the main quest. So when the Survivor's Quest goes in, the current set of beta reset stuff will go away. By which I mean, like, it'll be done, that the leaderboard will be sealed, basically. You know, put in a jar somewhere. And there will be a new contest with different goals and different rules. Which will be awarded when the Old Town Quest goes in. So, that's sort of the thought. If you do that, you better do it before some hardcore complainers complain. I would definitely already get bitched at about that. I have no illusions that changes that screw with things on that level would not be complained at. Heck, I get complained at for, you know, having things be quest items a lot of the time. So that's way past there. I try to avoid doing anything that I can't look a complainer in the eye, metaphorically, and say, no, like, this is just the way it's got to be, and here's the reason. Even if, you know, I can't necessarily explain the full reason yet. I'm not going to go down that path. It's going to be a while for reincarnation, and there will be a lot more sections of the main quest after the Survivors. Alright. Bunch of questions from Weird. Could we perhaps, at the Parturing Chamber menu of the puzzle box, where we get to choose a list of powder to insert, get an indication of the amount of each specific powder we have? I'm willing to say no. It would be, I mean, it's, don't get me wrong, it's not impossible, but it would be a lot of work for not a lot of gain. And it would make adding any more powders even more of a pain when it's already really pretty much a giant pain. So, I think I'm comfortable vetoing that. Also, I've been doing nothing but resting for nearly 4 entire days worth of energy trying to get programmed terror. I'm doing it wrong, aren't I? It is possible to do it wrong. In retrospect, if I were designing that again, it would be more resistant to brute forcing it, and by resistant I mean just not let you brute force it. Not because I have any problem with people trying to brute force it, just because people seem really intent on assing themselves doing it. And that's not specifically a dig at Weird, but this is like the 4th or 5th time I've been approached with questions like that, and it's kind of, it's not really intended to be something that you brute force. You're welcome to just sit there and do nothing but watch TV until you go crazy. And that's very fitting for the skill, so it doesn't bother me by any means. But, like, I don't know, just one of those things that slipped through my usual rubric of assume that people are going to try to be optimal about this and design it so that the optimal path is still not ridiculously unfun. So I might have to go back in there at some point and redesign that. I think it fits really well for what the skill represents, but I obviously don't want people stabbing themselves in the genitals. Vague ETA on the Survivor's Quest? I was talking about that before, so we'll just skip that question. So, early February. Is it wrong that I'm trying to think of an inch mile thing to ask here? Well, actually, the first question you had was kind of an inch mile thing. I mean, I had put in the... I'm not sure if I put in the thing for old coins before you asked that. But, I mean, there's the indicator now with the adventures for old coins, saying how many old coins you have, so... So you might have managed to, you know, subconsciously inch mile. Keep up the good work. The create account page with the 18-year-old verification excuse to get banned if you misbehave system mentions a range of adult topics. We have drug use, drug dealing, violence, murder, cannibalism. Think you will ever put something in that deals with the, according to Americans, worst kind of adult topic? You know, very awful indecent stuff like wardrobe malfunctions? Actually, I did write that with the understanding that, like, I could put in something like that if I wanted to. The funny part being that I'm fairly sure that I won't ever. Not because I think it's particularly indecent, but because I'm really bad at writing romance. Like, I've GM'd for a long time. That's where most of, like, my writing and explaining and talking skills come from. But there's only been, you know... I mean, it's a standard, you know, role-playing game. There's not a lot of romance going on. And when there is, it's almost invariably with the female players, which are almost invariably my, like, real-life girlfriends, which is kind of awkward in, like, a group setting when, like, your girlfriend playing a character is trying to start up a romance with an NPC that you're running as GM. It's just kind of weird. There was actually one game where it ended up working out better because my wife now, Liz, was running a character that was romantically involved with one of the other PCs, which worked out way better. I mean, it sounds kind of weird from a, you know, perspective, from a normal role-playing perspective, but, or, like, you know, a societal perspective, but it was way easier to handle than, like, the weird dual-layered social awkwardness that usually results. Anyway, moral of the story, I don't usually, I'm not very experienced with that kind of storytelling, so I don't think I would inflict it on anyone. And, you know, anything that was, like, visually sexual, well, I mean, except for, you know, some of the Halloween costumes that were kind of hot, would probably have all of the, you know, erotic potential of a National Geographic article. That said, I actually had a sort of interesting realization. Not that it's unique by any means, probably, but I mean, everyone who's dealt with American culture for any length of time has noticed kind of what Weird's talking about here, where, you know, you can have a show where people get shot every day, but you could not show someone having sex on, you know, the same show at the same time slot, which is pretty weird. It's like, oh, yeah, people can die, but, you know, we can't show, you know, breasts, whatever. So that's a fairly well-known, well-noticed thing. And there's another layer there, Jeff, I've thought about before, which I guess gets talked about less, which is that the thing that is considered bad in our culture, like, it will get your rating moved up, is not the violence, but the consequences of the violence. So, if you have a children's show, you know, people can sword fight as long as they don't hurt each other. Which is kind of funny, because you end up with really incompetent, like, everybody, but you'll have that. Which is kind of the... Or, like, you can, you know, kill someone, you know, if they're a robot. And, like, they'll explode instead of, like, being gory, right? Which is kind of the, like, the sexual equivalent of, like, okay, you know, you can have sex in a children's show. Like, you know, I'm specifically thinking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles here. So, like, you can have sex with someone as long as it turns out at the end that they're a robot. And, you know, they can't get pregnant or give you an STD. Or, like, I don't know, have their feelings hurt or whatever. Because, like, you know, and this is, you know, maybe a little closer to Rule 34 for comfort, but, you know, like, Leonardo can, you know, stick his katana through, you know, the gut of a foot soldier and make it explode. Like, that's fine. But, like, and, like, I think that that's sort of, like, there's a direct parallel there, which is perhaps too graphic for comfort, but there's a direct parallel there that is broken. But more importantly is teaching that, you know, violence doesn't have consequences. And that's another fairly common train of thought, usually without, you know, the graphic, you know, katana comparison, but whatever. The third step there, which I only had recently, which I'm sure is not novel, but I thought was kind of interesting, is that when you have a movie, particularly, or a television show, that is aiming for a particular rating, which they almost always are, I'm not sure if that's normal in other cultures too, but in American culture, like, you have a movie and you're like, okay, this has to be PG-13, or this has to be R, like, we can't go over into NC-17, or, you know, this has to be, even a lot of times, like, this has to be PG-13 and not PG to, like, really appeal to a target audience. Because they probably won't go to a PG movie. Because they're weird. I mean, I still go to G movies, whatever. But, so that's sort of the mindset. Like, you're trying to get into the slot. But the way that the slots are defined is basically, I mean, there's a little bit of overlay, but you can go up to this in each category. So, like, you know, if you've got R, you can have, like, incredibly foul language, you know, whatever you want. You can have Watchmen-level violence, which is pretty fucking insane. And you can have, like, moderately graphic sex. But it's generally not, it's not, like, an additive thing. So, you can have, I mean, like, well, Watchmen, I guess, is a really good example here. You can have incredibly graphic violence and fairly graphic sex, and that doesn't pump you over. So, it creates this interesting situation where you can have, if you're having a movie that is predicated on violence, which I think you could say Watchmen is, like, that it's really important to the tone, that they have, like, really graphic violence, which, in a lot of ways, like, showing the consequences of violence is, again, what they're getting. But because they have that really graphic violence, they can just throw in a sex scene, and it's no biggie. And, you know, have, like, a guy wandering around, make it all film. Without moving out of that rating. Just, like I said, just a freebie. So, it creates this interesting connection there. That is probably not entirely healthy, where a movie with sex is proportionately more likely to have violence in it, and a movie with violence is proportionately more likely to have sex in it, so that they can get the ratings they want, so that they can stay within those ratings. Just kind of interesting. Like, I think kind of explains a bit, but you'll have that. Culture is weird. I'm not even going to say that just Americans are weird, because everybody's culture is pretty weird, but that's just one that's particularly struck me. Right, moving on to some questions from Al. How was Christmas, both in real life and in game? Well, let's do game first. Christmas in game was, actually, I thought it went really well. The rollout went really smoothly. If you missed that, there was the start of the content, like when the snow fell, basically. And pretty much everything past that was automated. So snow fell, people started building snowmen and unlocked, you know, bigger and better snowmen, killing snowmen, etc. And then finally the boss, which came up just about at the right time. I was pretty pleased with that. Like, all of that went really well. There were definitely some bugs that were repeated that would not have been repeated if I released them content manually. So, I guess good and bad there. Like the people's weapons keeping getting replaced by brain staples and singles. Definitely would only have happened once if I had been rolling out the content manually. But kind of got, basically copy-pasted, literally copy-pasted, in a couple of different places. So I ended up having to fix it several times, which at the same time is a fail on my part, because I really should have realized that that code had been replicated, gone and unreplicated it. But lesson learned. And I think it went pretty fabulously, and I think people enjoyed their presence, and I really like the ornament mechanic. I think that definitely stick around for next year. In real life, it was not as crazy as I thought it was going to be, but I talked about last podcast. Unfortunately, my nephew was, well, nephew-in-law, I don't think there's actually one of there. Oh, no, I do have another nephew-in-law, actually. Okay, so one of my nephew-in-laws, nephews-in-law, maybe, was very sick, and unfortunately couldn't travel. So pretty much half the people were going to be there were coming with him, and that didn't end up happening. It was still pretty fucking nuts, though. Upsides include my mother-in-law had an old haiku book, like, from the 50s, like one of the first people trying to bring haiku over to the States, which was kind of funny in parts, because it's like this big explanation of, like, this is what a haiku is, and it's totally weird in Japanese, and you've never heard of it. But the book itself was really very good. A lot of attention to detail, like the translation and stuff, and talking about the challenges there. Things like that. Very cool. So I read that. And also got to see Princess and the Frog, which was pretty good. If I had children, I would definitely take them to see it. And Puyo was really excited, because her actual degree is in 2D animation. So, like, in a happy magical world, that would lead to something of uprising, say, of 2D animation. And hopefully she'd be able to actually get a job in her field someday. In a happy magical world. So yeah. Those are some kind of highlights. And we got to play some Seafarers Catan. We got that for Christmas. Definitely better than Cities and Knights. So I guess if there are any Cities and Knights aficionados out there, I'm calling you out. Seafarers, way better. Actually, an expansion rather than like a rules replacement. Noticed a lot of techniques lately that have hidden bonuses, like the Hammer Strike if you have Hammer equipped, or the Ghoul Bite if you have a Wolf Mask. Are there lots more similarly undiscovered hidden bonuses? Let's see. I would have to do a really thorough search to tell you exactly how many, and that would be really weird and spoilery anyway. But I would say like half-ish of the attacks have an additional form that isn't necessarily indicated on the in their description. Or might be hinted at, but isn't like obvious. So yeah, there's a lot of those. Care to explain how Daring Snowman's attacks works now that Christmas is over? How does the conflicting forces show up instead of the 100+ damage? I think I'm good. I might end up reusing him. So, you might have another shot at spading that out. It's definitely, the decision there isn't random at all, whether it gives you the conflicting forces or not. So, there's just a variable that's being manipulated that you may or may not have realized. So, yeah, we'll see. Let's see. Voles is answering a question for me. Weird is making fun of Voles answering a question for me. Voles is making fun of Voles answering a question for me. Okay, Jane sent some questions. With the Survivor's Quest, will any new areas be introduced, or will it all play on the areas that we already have? Yes, this is the first one that will actually play out in the existing areas. Which is to say, like, top-level areas. Like, there will be new locations within them. So, like Southside, there's stuff going on in Southside that isn't necessarily all in, like, you know, the park and the abandoned building. You've already have had places. And then there are other areas where it is layered on top of the existing content explicitly. With that, do you see Gang Warfare expanding as new areas introduced? Yeah. There's the design for Old Town includes an area that can have Gang Warfare. I will be taking a very close look at that when I actually roll it out. I may or may not include the Gang Warfare right away. It may be a longer turn sort of thing. Just depending on how many people we have participating in PvP actively. Like, if we've got, you know, 10 people actively in PvP, probably not worth putting in a fifth area, you know. But if we have, you know, 100 people, probably worth putting in a fifth area. And there's the fudge factor in between there that I'll need to figure out when I roll that out. What is the plan for Cyberware? You've already seen part of it. If you befriend Boris and talk to him, the biggest addition to Cyberware will be in Old Town. So I don't plan to actually release the, like, coding, et cetera, for Cyberware before the Old Town quest comes out. It's pretty interesting, though. Like, I like it a lot. So I'm looking forward to putting it in, but it's not worth putting in much before Old Town goes in. Sort of like hacking wasn't worth putting in a long time before the Survivor's Quest. Because the Survivor's Quest pulls out of that. Among the various subplots of Metroplexity, the savage conflict between the fairy and the fisherman is one I could see going in a lot of different ways. As you talked earlier about the future continuations of the subplot lines, how do you see that developing forward? Maybe something with the spherical egg? That is actually something that gets picked up on, like, explicitly. I already know how that's going to get picked up on. It's a lot more tangled even than it looks on the surface, so I hope that you end up enjoying it. The spherical egg is important in that sort of... and the spherical egg itself is also useful separately, will also be useful separately, whenever I put in the pet system, because it can hatch and be adorable. I even have art for it. But I don't have the pet system in, so it doesn't work yet. Same thing for, which one is it? It's the deactivated SD micro, I believe, that you can find in the Midgard warehouse, is repairable. Will be repairable to become a pet when pets are in. So, I mean, there are a couple of old hooks in there that haven't been picked up in a while. I mean, you've got, like, the Boris' claw, obviously, for cyberware, and him pointing you to the doctors. And the pets have those, too. Before hacking went in, there were two PDAs for a long time. Not counting the encrypted PDA, but two usable PDAs for a long time. There's some old hooks there, and that's one of them. Let's see, Llama Man. So what is the geographical layout of the different zones? Are the docks on, like, Metroplex or some other body of water? I guess Southside is in the south, harbor's to the east, and Slags are to the south of the harbor. That's about right, yeah. Southside, is... is west of Lake Metroplex, like substantially further west than the Harpers and the Slakes. And the university is north of that whole agglomeration. And downtown is even further north than that. The nice burbs are past there. The city as a whole is built up like on the edge along the lake. So if you see a body of water, it's almost assuredly going to be Lake Metroplex, unless you can like tell it's a river. So, yeah, the docks are on, like, Metroplex, and the Slags are also, obviously right on there. One thing that is important to note, though, is that the areas that you go to are, like, just little snapshots. They're basically whatever's within walking distance of the Metros stop there. So they don't actively, like, click into each other, with the obvious exception of, you know, outside the Slags, and you just walk into the Slags. You might see a couple of other things like that in the future, but they're just kind of, if you think of them as having, there's quite a bit of distance between each of them. It's not like the docks immediately border on the Slags. If you had a lot of time on your hands, you could probably truck down, though. It's kind of a waste of time, but if we had, like, a pen and paper role-playing game, someone were at the docks, it's like, I walked to the Slags, I don't want to use the Metros, because, you know, they're, you know, terrible demons in the Metros or whatever. They're trying to get into my brain. Then, yeah, they could totally truck it. And we've got some questions from Prestige. Will hacking or the other aspects of the net ever become relevant to the main reset quests? Yeah, absolutely. That's why they're in there. Which is kind of funny. I'm not sure if I haven't explained this well or what, but I seriously get, like, a message a day at least being like, hacking doesn't seem like it's very done. Here's some more stuff you could add to hacking. When, which is helpful, and I've got a lot of good ideas, like, don't get me wrong. But really the vast majority of it is just that it's not done because... Well, I mean, for the same reason that combat wasn't fully realized in Southside Park. Like, there's only, you know, what, like, 30 computers or something like that? It's like, well, there were only, like, 5, like, 10-ish weapons in Southside Park and, you know, a handful of techniques. Just because it's not done yet. It's like, there's a lot of plot to go through, and I don't want to, you know, burn out all of the stuff before the plot's done. You know, so you go through Southside Park and you don't have every possible technique yet. And similarly, you go through the hacking content that's contiguous with, like, the University Slags quest area, like the hacking for beginners, and you don't get everything that you can possibly do with hacking. Because there's a lot of neat systems that you can hack into. I guess one way to see it is that throughout the game, there's a thread that you can solve basically any problem through violence, correctly applied. Once you get into richer areas, that starts to apply to hacking as well. So, you know, I want to find out something. Well, a really easy example. If you're in, like, a swanky building, not like the Slags buildings that are basically bunkers, but if you were, like, in an office building downtown and you wanted to get through a door, there are, you know, okay, maybe you can break down the door and it'll set off an alarm, whatever. Or you can blow up the door and it'll set off an alarm. Or, you know, use the key, which you've got through some other means. And those are all, you know, pretty obvious. I've used all of those before. But if you're in a nicer area, you can also, you know, hack the building's computer and tell it to open the door for you, and the door will open. Which is, I mean, not immediately apparent by how much hacking you've seen so far, because the areas that you're in are not that advanced. But when you start talking about Old Town, and especially downtown, there are a lot of problems that have hacking solutions. So yeah, it's in there entirely because it's important to the main quest. You won't necessarily have to hack to get through the main quest, depending on the choices you make. Just like you won't necessarily have to engage in any combat to get through the main quest. Do both Bornstar and Unearthly Coins react to the same universal definition of evil actions? Do they operate on different definitions of morality? I think I'll leave that one for people to spade. They both hook into existing systems, though. So there's more going on there than is immediately apparent. Last question. How do you feel about the size of the player base? Do you have any thoughts about promoting the game any more than you have so far? Size of the player base, I'm really happy with. It is growing pretty much exponentially, which is what you expect with something word of mouth. So we got, from 1,000 to 1,100 very quickly compared to, 800 to 900, that sort of thought process. Which I'm really happy with. I'm really happy, even more than that, with the quality, you could say, of the player base. The suggestions and comments that I get are very good. Very well thought out. As far as promoting the game more, word of mouth is still the best advertisement, really. I mean, it's just a universal truth. I have considered... actually, my wife bugs me about this all the time, which is kind of funny. I've considered doing some web advertising, but I'm still kind of torn on it. Insofar as... I mean, the game is still in beta. I feel a little bad about advertising a, unfinished product. But it's also... I'm not sure if that quality that I was just talking about will necessarily keep up. And both of those make me kind of leery. I have been thinking about that and will continue thinking about that. There will probably be some advertising after launch, but that's in quite a while. But there might be some before then, too. But in the meantime, everybody tell your friends and, use MetroPucks and your SIGs on forums. There's actually a nice banner that we made if you search in our forums for it. If anyone has strong thoughts or opinions on that, feel free to mention those to me. But for the moment, it's still definitely in the thinking phase. I don't have a moral objection to it, but I would feel a little weird doing it, so I haven't gone through with it yet. That's it for this time. I hope you enjoyed listening. I apologize if I sounded morose through the whole thing. It's just the cold getting to my throat and making me a little cranky. Have a good time, and we will see about this whole schedule thing and how that works. And I hope to have good things to report for you next podcast. Thanks for listening, and thanks for playing, and have a very happy new year.